I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. And today we are talking with someone who's not just winning in the courtroom. She's changing lives inside and outside of it. Laura Ramos-James is the founder and sole owner of Ramos-James Law, based in Austin, Texas. And as you can see, she's outside because the weather is cooperating today. She is a nationally recognized personal injury attorney, a 2025 changemaker named by Austin Woman Magazine, and the driving force behind what's now an eight-figure law firm. But before the awards, the best-selling books, and the big verdicts, Laura was a survivor. Her story starts with personal tragedy, and it's that experience that drives the deep compassion and fierce advocacy that her firm is known for. She's not only one of the most sought-after lawyers in Texas, she's also a mother of two, a thought leader, and a champion for undeserved communities. And in this episode, we're getting into the real stuff, the early days of building her firm, what it's like leading in a male-dominated industry, and how she approaches business with heart, grit, and smart strategy. Laura, we're so excited to have you here on the show today.
Yes, thank you so much for the invite. I'm super excited.
So you've built this incredible practice, but take us back. What pulled you toward law, and how did your own personal injury shape the kind of lawyer that you wanted to become?
Yeah, so I guess it all started when I was 3 years old. I was attacked by a German Shepherd. It was a catastrophic injury where this dog took a piece of my nose and I had to have facial reconstructive surgery and multiple medical procedures. So I grew up with that. My parents had to deal with that. And, you know, this dog belonged to some family friends and they didn't warn us it was there. They didn't warn us it was dangerous. They didn't properly restrain it. But there was always the implication that my parents should have done something. And so that kind of ignited in me, even at that age, the feeling that, you know, someone needed to stand up for what was the right thing and what actually happened and the truth. And I always wanted to be a lawyer. I didn't necessarily, you know, so young, put two and two together that, oh, because this happened to me and my family went through this. That's why I want to do it. But I always wanted to, you know, just have that yearning for trying to help people that are wronged and are trying to find justice. So I grew up, became a lawyer, and I wanted to be a litigator. I wanted to be in the courtroom. And initially, I started doing personal injury, but on the defense side, because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be doing trials. And you know, that's how I felt my passion was going to be fulfilled. And soon enough, I discovered that I actually align more with victims and survivors. And then it all came full circle. I belonged across the table with people that, you know, that had been through traumatic experiences like my own. And, you know, others were making implications or saying they were not that hurt. They were at fault themselves. And so that's when I really discovered that I needed to be a personal injury lawyer. And that's what I do for a living now.
Wow. Isn't it cool, though? I do feel like life does kind of prepare us for our calling or our gifts that we end up if we let it, right? You know, that's not everybody's story, but I think it's really cool hearing how experiences like that lead to, you know, what ends up happening later on in life. And I think it gives you that unique perspective as well. And I knew that there were so many things, experiences that I, you know, when I was looking at you coming on that I just identified with. And I want to talk about that as well. Like, Austin's a pretty competitive market for law too. What made you think, oh, I'm going to build something unique here, you know, and different. And what did those first few years look like as well?
Yeah. So I went to law school. I went to Baylor Law School, and that's in Waco, a couple hours away from Austin. And through law school, I had internships in Austin, and I just fell in love with it. I knew that this, you know, everything about it really resonated with me, you know, like the ability to be outdoors, people, you know, people are very warm and welcoming, and it's not pretentious. It's very laid back. And, you know, it's in Texas, so there's a big Hispanic presence. And so everything about it made it so that I wanted to be in Austin ultimately. But when I started practicing, life took me to South Texas, and that's where I began my career. And when I decided to make the switch and become a personal injury attorney, I had an opportunity to reconnect with a former mentor that, you know, that I had interned for when I was in law school. And he was here in Austin. He basically connected me with another lawyer who was looking for someone here in Austin. And that was, you know, that was amazing. I decided to move away from South Texas, come to Austin. And, you know, I didn't start the practice right away. I actually worked for a couple other firms. And I had no point of view at that, or no perspective at that point of like, oh, the market's competitive, but I'm going to join it anyway. Like, I was not thinking about that. I just wanted to be a plaintiff's personal injury attorney. And that's, you know, once I was in Austin, and then once I decided to open up my firm, then it's like, well, it isn't going to be a walk in the park, but I'm here already. This is the place I call home. So let's figure it out.
That's awesome. And you actually ended up scaling to an 8-figure firm. I mean, that's not a small feat for, you know, any small business, let alone, you know, somebody who's going into this just wanting to practice law. You know, like you said, you weren't trying to go out on your own. And I think that's a really important part of the journey, too, is just getting into the industry, paying your dues, I call it, you know, learning. And I spent a decade of my career before even owning a business. Some people are entrepreneurs right away and get to, you know, go on that journey. But I think a really important part of my career and my experience was getting to, you know, just work in the industry, learn a lot of those skills and all that kind of stuff. So what financial decisions or strategic hires helped you to grow sustainably without losing control?
Before a financial decision, it was the intentional act of thinking, do I want to be a solo practitioner or do I want to create a team and be a part of a team? Because there's a million ways to peel the banana. You can make excellent, you know, you can do really well financially if you are a solo practitioner. I know, you know, solos who have, you know, who are millionaires many times over, but also there's different ways to do things as a team. And I was feeling like the way that I was going to reach the community and like the need that existed was not going to be by myself. There's not enough of me. The need was there. And I enjoy collaboration more than I enjoy, you know, just operating as a solo. And so I figure there has to be people out there that share my drive, my passion, my mission, you know, wanting to practice as a values-based law firm. And I was right. Thank God there are people out there, people who have joined my team. So I guess first was the mindset or rather deciding which route do you want to go and then putting your effort toward it. Financially, what that meant was, you know, figuring out that it was going to be ebbs and flows. Like, I was going to have to acquire a lot of cases and it's going to be hard for a while I don't have someone else helping. And it's going to be an investment, and it's going to be a really expensive investment if it doesn't work out right away, because attorneys are expensive. Staff, you know, legal staff is expensive. Overhead, you know, for a while I was working. I mean, I really started working out of my living room with my laptop. So I was paying rent to nobody. But eventually, you know, I started having more than I could handle and decided that if I found the right people, it was worth taking that risk. And, you know, I started small. I didn't start hiring a lawyer right off the bat. I actually hired a college student that I trained to be a legal assistant and helped me with things like sending letters, going to the mail, running errands and things like that. And then little by little, you know, the need kept growing. Then I hired a part-time paralegal. Then she became full-time. And then, you know, at some point it was time for an attorney. And, you know, that's basically the financial decision that led to, once there was the first lawyer, I just replicated that, you know, over and over, like kept growing and then adding staff. and resources.
Oh, what a great model I think that is. And it's not necessarily, I think when you talk to entrepreneurs and people who are just like, go, 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 it's really much more of a ready, fire, aim, you know, approach to just getting to the next phase and making that work. But it sounds like it was very strategic and planning and staying within your means. And I love that. There's a lot of similarities there too with my journey. I identify for that. So I think a lot of listeners will too. You know, when I was starting in on my journey and, hey, what do I want to do? Do I want to just do this really, really well on my own and continue on? Or do I want to work with others? And I think at some point, everyone's got to ask that question and do it. But let's talk about that planning piece, because I love how that's starting to come about. It feels very intentional, the things and the decisions that you're making to get to where you are. So how did you approach things like pricing or cash flow or managing overhead, you know, financially when you're first getting traction, especially when your education and experience is in practicing law and really your passion too? But these are all things that also are very important parts of, you know, growing the business too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, initially I was very blessed that when I started the firm, I had a very deep understanding as to what, because I had to do it for other firms where I knew, you know, I mean, inside and out, case value, I knew inside and out how long it would take, you know, for the most part, right? We're not fortune tellers. If we were, then, you know, things would be a lot easier. But for the most part, I got very familiarized because that's all I do. All I did, all I've done in my career is personal injury. So I could very easily evaluate, you know, how much is this case going to resolve? How long is it going to take? How many cases can a lawyer handle, you know, without X number of people supporting, you know, supporting staff or in litigation, not in litigation. I knew that inside out. And I also knew what I didn't know. And I had no ego about it. You know, I tried to learn things and I went and, like, for example, I took, like, very, very early on. I mean, we're talking about like 2018. I took a course on like Google Ads and I was like, it was very early, like how to, you know, how to position yourself and things like that. But I wasn't going to learn, you know, finance statements and things like that enough to like go deep and also be able to run a practice and be a trial lawyer. And so I recognized where I didn't have the expertise, and I sought out people that could be, you know, part of the team. One of those people is my husband. It's someone I relied on. I very early on also, you know, got somebody to help us with, you know, with our books and things like that. So I didn't try to reinvent the wheel. I don't even think that if I tried now, I would be successful at it. I think you have to know where your strengths are and your weaknesses. And so I just got people on board that complemented the strengths I had.
That is such a good point. And not everybody really thinks about that part of it. Is you, I love how you said you knew that what you didn't know, like you're very, just own it. Hey, you know, I think some of that mindset, especially when you're sitting in a leadership seat and a decision-making seat, problem-solving seat, everybody's looking at you to have all the answers. And sometimes the best thing to say is, you know what, I'm probably not the right person to do that. Let's just look at somebody who does, you know, who has these skills, these passions. This is where I want to be. This is a space I want to live in, and really kind of fight for that. I think that's a tough thing to do as, you know, somebody in that position. So what do you think, in your opinion, what do you wish more service-based entrepreneurs understood about financial health and reinvestment in their business? Because you talked about those things and how you did it. So what do you wish more people sitting in that seat would really truly grasp?
Yeah, I definitely think you have to have a basic understanding. So I'm not advocating for like, oh, I just don't know this. Someone else will do it. I'll just pay them. And many times you don't have money for that, right? Like I started my law firm with very limited funds. I didn't have, you know, large investments or savings or resources. And I was very conservative to where my money went. But I'll give you an example. Like to create our logo, I'm not a graphic designer, but my sister is. So I asked her to do it, you know, and in exchange, I reviewed a contract for her. So if you know, just get creative, I guess. If you don't know something, recognize you don't know it, look for help, but do try to understand, you know, have some basic understanding, because I think many people, or a lot of people, do get in trouble when they just completely abdicate. You know, I mean, it is your business. You do have a responsibility. I mean, some people have been stolen from because, you know, they just completely delegate, like signing checks and the books and all that to someone else without any oversight at all. But do look for people who that's their strength, their expertise, and ways to, you know, to be able to afford something like that in your business.
Right. That's a really good point, too, because we're not talking about, you know, the pendulum swinging over to the way other side that, oh, I have nothing to do with this. I don't know anything about that. That's their job. No, at the end of the day, it's your name on the company. It is, you know, the buck stops with you. So there does have to be some basic understanding. That doesn't mean you have to do everything. You definitely need to be involved in some kind of way. The buck stops with you. But we're not saying, you know, you have to be the one, because there's not enough hours in the day. There's not enough skills that you can, you know, hone up and all that kind of stuff. So that's a really good distinction to say a lot of that. But you're also known for being heart forward. And you talked about that a little bit in saying you wanted to hire other people and build a team that was value-based and shared that with you. So how do you balance that empathy with the hard financial realities of running the business? Because, you know, you do have to make decisions based on, like you were saying, the case value and things like that. So how does that wrap into the business side of things?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a couple of books that could be written on just on this topic alone, right? I mean, it's an art because everything from taking a phone call. Someone has decided that they want to talk to you and maybe bring your case, and maybe it's not a good fit and you're not going to be able to help them. But if you're wanting to practice, you know, with compassion and you know, in that sort of way, then you will find a way to help them. One way I've found is, you know, a part of my case acquisition strategy is networking with other professionals. And I have, you know, I've spent a lot of time getting to know these professionals, making sure that they have integrity, that they have, you know, that they provide excellent services, and that they are people that are trusted referral sources. So if I can't help, I'll do everything I can to put them in touch with someone who will. And even then, sometimes people think like, oh, you know, you sent me somewhere and they didn't take my case, you know, you're network is worthless. It's like, well, if there's no viable case, I can't guarantee they'll happen. But as long as you do as much as you can to actually care about where that ends up, you know, and as far as like actually handling the case or even closing the case, finding people who, and it's hard, right? There's so much failure in trying to find the right people, because many times you don't know until you're actually working side by side whether the values are shared and whether they see eye to eye, you know, on certain topics. But you do want, I think, very importantly, to identify that your team members have those shared values and goals and aspirations, and try to help you pursue those things together, and that you're aligned. And yeah, it's going to go anywhere from, like, you know, making tough business decisions to, you know, to the wins and like sharing the upside that, you know, that also is going to go hand in hand with that.
Yeah, that's good. And you're a mom, an author, a firm owner. How do you, you know, we talked about balancing business and empathy. What about prioritizing your energy and time? And like, you feel very much planned out, strategic, systematic in a lot of your approach. How have you done things like that holistically, like in the other areas that you're involved with, to help you stay grounded, or talk to me about that?
That is, you know, that's probably one of the toughest parts of my journey, that I have decided that, you know, I've heard somewhere else, I'm sure you have too, where working women say, oh, you know, you can have it all, just not at the same time. I reject that. You can have it all. You can have it all at the same time. But you know what? You just have to know there's going to be guilt. You just have to know that there's days that you won't be able to get to your kids. There's day that you won't be able to get to emotion at work. I mean, you just will not have success at all times. Things will not be perfect, which is tough for people like me. I don't identify myself as a perfectionist, but my husband says that all the time. He's like, you just, you know, you're a perfectionist on certain things. And it's tough to see that many times things don't work out the way you, you know, you start out your day thinking, oh, you know, I have this podcast, for example, and like yesterday, and then like your kid's sick, like you have to cancel it. The day's not going to look like the way you thought it would. But you just have to be okay with that. It's tough. I mean, there are, you know, nights of like, you know, just staying up all night or like, you know, just blood, sweat and tears, just crying your heart out because you couldn't get to something. But also to balance that, there are rewards that, you know, are just endless daily. I mean, everywhere you look in your profession, at home. So, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. You can do things, you know, you can do things however they work out for you. My own journey involves, like I said, a lot of, like, it's a balancing act, a lot of feeling like a failure, but also a lot of, you know, feeling just like full of, like, in every, fulfilled, like, in every aspect of my life. So, who knows? It's not for everyone.
That's great. And I think you're right there. It isn't for everybody. But I want to, this takes us to our signature question. We ask this to every guest. In your experience, what does it take to be in that seat that you're in as a business owner, as a leader, as somebody who's driving vision, identifying values, surrounding your team, you know, with the people that share that? What is that in your experience? What does it take to be able to do stuff like that?
So I don't think it's one thing. If I could just, you know, if I could tell you like the formula to me, it's three things. One, passion, right? Because I've shared this before with other business owners. I think there are so many profitable opportunities, you know, that one can pursue. But if it's not your passion, if it's like, oh, you know, it's really profitable to own, you know, I don't know, a printer manufacturer, like if you make a lot of money and like the margins are really high and whatnot, you know, the months are going to go by, years are going to go by, and you're just going to burn out and you're not going to be able to have anything sustainable because it's not your passion. Like, you don't like fucking printers. And sorry for my language, but it's like, it's the truth. Like, if you love something, if you have the passion for it, then you will be able to do it for, you know, for a long period of time. I mean, hopefully forever. I mean, that's my goal, at least. And then perseverance, because it's not a one day thing, a 1 month thing, 1 year thing. It's, you know, it's daily, consistent investments, consistent sacrifices, you know, staying at it and making, basically incorporating habits that help you pursue that. And then, you know, passion, perseverance, and then I actually already forgot what the third thing I was going to tell you.
Because you're so passionate about it.
Passionate about it.
But I think those two are very good. Passion and perseverance are two very good things because you can have one and not the other and it's misguided or misdirected. And you can have another and kind of wander because you don't have that heart in it. So yeah, I think those are two very good places to start. But I like that point of it's not just one thing. There's so many things that you're dealing with. And there's so many things that it takes to get to where you are, to stay where you are, and to continue doing what you love. And I thank you so much, not just for the work that you do, for being so open about the path that, you know, you took and what that looked like for you. I think your story is a powerful reminder that you can lead with compassion, build a strong business, and still hold space for family, purpose, all that kind of stuff, impact that you're having. Because I heard that a lot too, is, oh, you can't have it all and da-da-da. One has to sacrifice another. And being a working woman, mother, you know, all those things that somebody who had passion and drive and wanting to be like, I don't feel like I need to sacrifice one for the other. I really, really identify and resonate with, you know, that approach too, and things that you're saying. And I think it's very encouraging to find others that are saying that too. So I love how you answered that last question, even if it gets away from us too, like everything that we want to say. Because at the end of the day, we know it's not just about starting a business. It's about staying in it, you know, for the long haul, for the right reasons. So those two, passion and perseverance, are really good. So if you're listening and you're on that journey, I hope this conversation inspires you to lead with purpose, just like Laura. And if you're looking for, you're in the Austin area, or you'd like to get in touch somehow, Laura, how can people find you if they're looking for you?
Yeah, very easy. Our website is ramosjames.com. But if you just want to Google, you can type in Laura Ramos James or Ramos James. And we're across all social media platforms. So you'll find us anywhere you look.
Great. Yeah. And we can put those all in the show notes as well. So thank you so much for listening. And Laura, thank you so much for being here. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for having us.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.